Welcome to Beyond the Chutes, which is presented by Parasite Systems. I'm your host today, Doug Simcox, sitting in the BTC bus in the Cove, what we call the Cove, Mountain Cove. We're in Georgia, just outside of Chickamauga. I'm parked right up by the show barn, and we are at the 10th annual Mountain Cove Rodeo Reunion that Marlon Harris puts on each year. 10 years this year, and expecting a big turnout, and we've got friends that are already rolling in. The actual reunion isn't till tomorrow on Sunday, but today I'm meeting lots of great folks and lots of great legends in the sport of rodeo are stopping by the BTC bus. And right now I've got a friend that has stopped in. Ernie Roberts is his name, bull rider extraordinaire from the IPRA days. Friendship, Tennessee is where he calls home, but he grew up in this area. So welcome to BTC, Ernie.
Well, thank you, Doug.
I'd like to start. Our listeners love to hear the stories growing up, where you grew up, earliest memories. Take us all the way back, if you would, please.
Well, I started off in school about the eighth grade, and my father had passed away. And growing up here in North Georgia, in these mountains, we used to come out and spend time on each one of these mountains. The Lookout Mountain is behind us, Pigeon Mountain is in front of us, and it forms a beautiful horseshoe. Well, in the eighth grade, I was really raising cane with my mother because I wanted to come to the rodeo. Not that I was even old enough to ride, but years back, Mr. Preston Folks had his finals here. And so my high school coach and my teacher came in, and they said, "What's wrong with Ernie?" Because they kind of helped raise me after Daddy died. They knew Mama needed help because I was kind of a wild child. And so they brought me to the rodeo. But there, I got to meet some great, great individuals. That was the first time I'd ever met Liesl Harris. And over the years, I continued to rodeo, but I'd only go to about 6 or 8, maybe 10 rodeos a summer because I played basketball and I subconsciously had in my mind that I might be able to play pro ball someday. So when I graduated from high school, I went to Hiawassee College, and there I realized I didn't have the size or the ability to ever play pro ball. But this rodeoing was something that I'd learned and went to my 10, 12 rodeos a year I had got to meet. They were all IPRA rodeos when I started out. And I got to meet Glenn Bird, Jack Wiseman, Red Doffman, Dan Daly, some of my heroes that got me started on the right road. And then a few years later, after graduating from Hiawassee, I went to UTM because they had a rodeo team. And by maintaining my grades and my averages, I wound up winning the college national finals. I didn't win the world because they didn't do it like they do today. But I was able to secure the finals. And from that time on, I had met the great Freckles Brown, and he encouraged me to go ahead and get my PRCA card because he told me, he said, "Ernie, you've got a great foundation that you learned from great bull riders where you grew up." He said, "But you know what?" He said, "If you're going to ride bulls," he said, "ride them for the money." And so they put dreams, I said they did, I had the dreams of being able to just enter Cheyenne, enter Denver, San Antonio, some of the biggest rodeos in the world. And it was such a blessing to me because my friends and the IPRA opened that door for me. None of them were ever resentful or hostile that I went on to the PRCA. And from that time on, after securing the college finals, I continued to rodeo in the PRCA, and I went to 5, I think, PRCA finals, Southeast Circuit finals. Matt Dryden, some of the greatest stock producers around, put them rodeos on, and I was fortunate. I won my share. You know, my biggest regret in my rodeo career is not being as dedicated to it as a young man as I was after I got to college at Martin. And then after that, my eligibility was up, I helped Tony Coleman coach the rodeo team for a few years. Mac Barber and I spent a lot of time with the practice pen. He had the pen, and we bought and sold and traded bulls. And, you know, I learned the bull business. I learned how to read them. I learned a lot that I didn't know other than just turn your toes out and watch his head. You know, that ain't there. That's a lot of it. But at the same time, you learn to read these bulls. You learn to read them and see what's going on. So you can tell pretty much by the way a bull acts. Is he going to be mean? Is he going to be aggressive? You can't always tell. You can't read a book by its cover. Mm-hmm. You may see a bull that looks great, but they're athletes, just like football players. You may see a guy come through with a 29-inch waist and a 48-inch set of shoulders, and he can't walk and chew gum at the same time. It's a God-given athletic ability.
And, so got a question, Ernie. You talk about UTM. That's University of Tennessee Martin. Mm-hmm. And you were up there for 4 years.
Yes, sir. As a contestant.
As a contestant. So talk a little bit. I don't know that we've had anybody on the show yet, Ernie, that's talked about life as a college competitor.
Well, you know, it's different because you're your, like in pro rodeo, you're your own coach, you're your own deal. Yes, they help you with books and scholarship and things of that nature, but it takes some self-discipline to remember why you're there. You're not there just to have a good time. You go to college and you want to win a world title, you got to do the background. You got to keep your grades up or you can't go to the finals. Mm-hmm. You have to maintain. And being a part of a rodeo team, I got around people like Skippy Emmett, UT Martin's first national all-around champion. Then comes along Tony Coleman, former IPRA contestant, brother of Alan Coleman, great calf roper. And then a few years after that, we all, you know, really settled down in the PRCA ranks. But the thing that rewards me most of looking back and thinking about it back is the teachers. Dr. Mm-hmm. N.W. Robinson was the very first rodeo team coach we ever had. I mean, he was my preacher. He was my teacher. He's my disciplinarian. When I walked in his office and he said, shut that door, wasn't no point telling the field about it because he already knew. He's a retired colonel from the service. And incidentally, in my cowboy poetry, I have written a couple of songs about him. But to continue on just a minute, we went on, and after college days, I met a lady that tutored me a little bit in college, and that was 32 years ago, and we're still married.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. So, now, before you jump around here, and I love this. So he was a preacher, a teacher, a disciplinarian, you said. So he was your rodeo team coach, but it wasn't just focused on rodeo riding?
No. Doc taught us a side of life that, you know, he knew. A bull rider's career, look, I don't care how good you are, a bull rider's career is short and sweet. If you maintain the ability to ride and don't get injured real bad, then you've got 6 or 8, maybe sometimes 7 years. Today in the PBR, them dudes' lives were shorter because of the caliber of the bucking stock. But at the same time, Dr. Robinson would groom us in his lessons and his teaching on Sunday. You know, it planted a mind thought. You know, you've got to be a successful bull rider. It takes 3 things, in my opinion. First, you have to have some talent. Well, what is talent? It's being able to walk and chew gum at the same time. What is ability? A 300-pound, 5'9 man can't ride bulls. It's simple as that. He doesn't have the ability until he loses some weight because,
I see.
You know, it's just you got too much upper body and centrifugal force.
Yeah.
But the third and the most important ingredient is that ability to try and that want-to attitude to make an eight-second ride. Mm-hmm. I've seen great bull riders that look like a monkey riding a football on a bull, but they were able to make the whistle on a consistent, regular, high-percentage basis. They were winners, you know.
Yeah.
And as you improve in your riding career, you can polish these free arm movements. You can polish them. But the most important ingredient is that true grit that you have to be the meanest dude that ever walked the earth for 8 seconds.
Okay.
Then you have to be able to call on that aggressiveness when you need it.
Yeah.
And then when you step off that bull and you're walking back toward the chutes and your buddies, your peers are giving you a thumbs up, hey, I'm telling you, no better feeling in the world. That's better than cornbread.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And what you're speaking of with that aggression, that mindset, you're talking about rodeo, the mental aspect of rodeo.
Absolutely.
And your coach helped you build that?
Well, in the poem I wrote, I tell it like it is. Doc
now,
was
let me say one thing before you go there, Ernie. And I don't interrupt very often.
That's okay.
You're, I need it. And I just want to make sure I'm clear on this. You're a bull rider. You're aggressive. You got talent. You got skill. You got the rodeo mindset. And you're a poet. do tell.
Well, I was sitting around right here at Mountain Cove at Ricky Smith's deer camp one night, and I began to tell these stories. And I had a friend. He said, Ernie, you need to write these down. And so I began to record and write and do some things. I was a cop for about 21 years, and sometimes on a light night, I'd record a few sentences and I would maintain it and remember, and then I started composing poems. Well, I had a friend who was a friend of my wife's who was an English major, and she said, Ernie, if Edgar Allan Poe heard you butcher poetry, he'd roll over in his grave. And I said, ma'am, let me tell you something. If Edgar Allan Poe heard it, he wouldn't appreciate it because he ain't a cowboy. I said, cowboys appreciate saying cause instead of because.
I see.
But I've been really, I can put words together. And Baxter Black attended the UTM rodeo one year. I think it was around 79 or maybe 80. And he told me something about poetry. He said, Ernie, the thing about it is you have to paint a picture. Most of the people understand what you're talking about when you're talking about going 8 seconds on a bull. But he said, some of them won't. You have to paint a picture, and you have to get their mindset right. And it's like being a good Christian. I am not the kind of person I ought to be, but it is a mindset, it is. It really is. And of course, me being younger, when I was younger, just starting out, I was mean to the junkyard dog.
Right,
I'd go to
right,
a bar, start right. a fight. Lisa Harris has got some
Now, we're going to talk Lisa. I am a huge fan of Lisa.
Yeah.
A huge fan. But before we do that, you said you had a poem, the lyrics to a song that you wrote about your college rodeo coach.
Yes, sir.
I'm going to put you on the spot. Let's hear it.
Well, most of the time, I can recite some of my poems, but, when you get bucked off in the bull riding and you're in the arena and you come back and pull your chaps off and you kind of blend in with people.
Yeah.
But when you're on a horse in the arena, there's no room for mistake. Now, I have ad-libbed some poems, and I forgot, but I wished I had it in front of me because I'd be glad to recite it.
Okay.
But one of my favorite poems is one that I wrote when I was in law enforcement, but it rings a bell. When we have a hard day at the job and we're stressed out and everything, and we're ready to come home and relax, well, I wrote a poem. It's called A Good Remedy, and it goes like this. Let's see. Let me think about it just a minute. When I'm feeling down and a little low, I'll saddle my old horse and away I'll go. I'll ride through the bottoms and across the hills, leaving behind my problems, not even worrying about my bills. I'll see things that most never get to see, like an old mama coon taking her babies up a tree, or the first steps of a newborn fawn, wobbling and stumbling until his legs become strong. And then I'll look up to that clear blue sky, and I'll thank to God, how lucky am I? To be a part of these things nourishes my soul and means more to me than any silver or gold. And riding this old horse, there's plenty of time to ponder, because where I am now was way over yonder. And there's time to think about the cowboys and the way things used to be. Then I wonder, did God reincarnate me? Because I sure feel better when I'm sitting astraddle and smelling that squeaky leather from this old Hamley saddle. So if you can't find me, don't look long. Just check the barn, see if the horse is gone. Yep, riding's a good remedy for feeling down and low. So if you'll pardon me now, I feel the need to go. But I've had a lot of success, and people seem to like it. We worked the Williamson County Fair a couple of weeks ago with some cowboy poetry and picking and grinning. And incidentally, Nikki McLeod is a cowgirl poet and a singer. She'll be down here at the Cove after a while. So
I just got to say, yeah. I love that poem.
Thank you.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I've got about 80 of them.
You got your book with you?
No.
How did you come here without your book?
Well, you got to understand me.
Okay.
My wife says, the guy I'm with down here, he's a former rodeo guy too.
Yeah, yeah.
She said, y'all remind me of two grumpy old men.
So backing up, you rode here at this rodeo. You competed at this rodeo later on with your IPRA card?
No, I never. I did ride at Lafayette. I rode at the Longhorn Rodeo that Loretta Lynn had over here at McKenzie. I lied about my age. That's where I met John Clark.
Okay.
And I come up, laid my rigging back down. I seen this guy beside me. He had his rope out and warming it up. You know how bull riders do for a rodeo. And it said world champion John Clark. Mm. And I thought, it's cool, man. And so John was warming up his rope, and he had a hole in his glove. Well, he just pitched that glove over in the bullpen. And I asked him, I said, sir, why'd you do that? He said, I can't stand a hole in my glove. And I said, well, my glove's got a lot of them. Can I have that glove? He said, if you can get it out. Well, he throwed it in the bullpen, and White Lightning and some of them mean bulls. Well, I just went over and got me about a 6-foot shoot hook and drug it out, and I cleaned it up.
Okay.
Well, later on, after I got in the IPRA and was going to a bunch of Longhorn rodeos, I began to see what a good individual John Clark was, and he always remembered me. He's one of the ones that nicknamed me Hillbilly because I was from Tennessee.
Okay. Okay. And what years were you riding? Early 70s?
Well, I started riding about 14, but at a practice pen.
Yeah.
And my dad bulldogged a little bit. He wasn't really top-notch, but he did. He kind of introduced me to it. And then after high school, I only went to, like I told you, about 10 rodeos a year until I graduated. And then at Hiawassee, as my basketball career seemed to dwindle, it opened some doors in the rodeo. So I was going to rodeos left and right.
So that would be mid-70s, late
70s? No, that would have been 74, 75, and part of 76.
Okay, so already at that point, Longhorn Rodeo had been formed. Loretta Lynn was no longer involved.
She wasn't the last couple of years. She was very involved the first couple of years. I wished I'd brought my book. I got a picture of me and Loretta at Monroe, Louisiana one year.
Okay.
And see, I knew the family because Tony Coleman and our rodeo team coach, we used to buy bucking stock from Mooney Lynn, that's Loretta's husband, and Bobby Rowe. Bobby ran the company at the time. And so we all got to be good friends. That's how I met Ernie Lynn and Jack Lynn. Now, Jack was one of Loretta's sons that he lost his life in a river accident over at Hurricane Mills.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was at the funeral, and it was special between me and him because his first IPRA rodeo was Kensington, Georgia, right here, over here at the Tennessee Playhouse, at Loretta Lynn Longhorn Rodeo. And that was my first IPRA rodeo. He was riding Bronx, and I was riding bulls.
And this would have been?
This would have been in 1971. I was still in high school.
So it was Double L Rodeo then?
Yes, absolutely.
Right
over here at Kensington, Tennessee, where we're at now.
Yeah.
But it's so special to me to come back. And when I look at these mountains, because Ricky Smith and some of us guys, we used to saddle up horses and mules and ride all the way from Lookout around. And not only did that teach me something about cowboying and being a horseman, but it taught me a lot about how to read animals. And I believe in that, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I'll be darned. And you mentioned Liesl Harris.
Well,
when did you first meet? Down here at this rodeo, I believe you said?
I did. I was in the eighth grade, and one of my high school coaches and my mother, Miss Linda Gilpatrick, I was fussing so much and raising Kang, I was pouting. I was a spoiled little brat. And Linda walks in, Miss Gilpatrick, my teacher, and she said, what's wrong with him? She said, he's mad because he can't go that rodeo. She said, "Where's it at?" And I said, "It's over here in Mountain Cove." "Well, by golly," she said, "come on, I'll take you." So we got in there, and Mother went with us, and the first person I met was a bullfighter. He walked up, Liesl Harris, and a guy named Bobby Reese, I think, was fighting bulls with him. And I talked to Liesl, and I followed him around. I was in the eighth grade, and he was just so cordial and so nice. And so years later, after I got to college at Martin, he had already went to work in the PRCA, and I began to go to some Steiner rodeos, and we got reacquainted, even though I knew him over the years down here. And so as we got reacquainted, this continued for about 20 years throughout Liesl's career. And so one time my son, John Roberts, in the PRCA, you had to have three people that had worked NFRs to sign your commission card. And John liked one more. And I called Liesl. I said, "Liesl, I'm going to send you a video. And you be the boss. If you feel like he's worthy of it, fighting bulls, sign his card. If not, then I understand." Mm-hmm. Well, a few weeks went by, and John got his card in the mail. Mm-hmm. Well, next rodeo, Dale Hall hired him to fight bulls somewhere in Oklahoma, and Liesl happened to be hired to be the funny man. Well, Liesl called me that Monday morning. We didn't have cell phones back then. Monday morning, phone rang, it was Liesl. He said, "Ernie, I have a confession to make." I said, "What's that?" He said, "I never watched them videos." He said, "I got an opportunity to work with John." He said, "He's the real deal." Wow. And I appreciated that so much, because a lot of people don't know this. Liesl Harris actually trained Skipper Voss.
Yes, he did.
I was at Liesl's house in Collierville when Skipper was entered in the Wrangler bullfight at Cheyenne, Wyoming. Well, when he got out there, he called Liesl and said, "Listen, I have drawn Crooked Nose. What do you think? What's your advice to fight him?" And I was sitting there, and Liesl said, "Go to his horn side." Old Crooked Nose only had one horn. And he said, "So many people go to that off horn side because he's so fast." He said, "He gets his lead down pat and he'll cut you off." So he said, "Okay." And he won the round on the bull. And but I didn't, until that time, I didn't know how Liesl had trained so many great bull riders, you know. So, but Liesl and I became friends, and he's been such a blessing to me. And incidentally, now we're at the reunion, and even though he's gone, Cody Rhoda and his wife, that's Liesl's granddaughter and her husband, will be here tomorrow to accept the award.
Oh, wow. So, how neat. Yeah,
I'm tickled to death, and I'm honored to call Liesl Harris a friend.
You bet.
And I had a little problem one time years ago. I got in a fight at a motel, at a bar. Okay, now this was, you know, I wasn't but maybe a freshman in high school, and I broke this dude's nose. Well, it happened to be the district attorney's son. So here comes the police. They're looking for me. I climb a tree right in front of the motel, and I'm up 10 feet above knowing I'm going to jail. And I wasn't old enough to go to jail. So anyway, to make a long story short, they gave me my money back. The rodeo committee and Mr. Preston folks, they felt sorry for me. And a fella named Wayne Pennington, his wife just passed away recently. Her name's Nancy. He nicknamed me Squirrel, and Liesl stuck that name with me forever because I hid in the top of that tree. So we've got such great stories. And you know, people would think this didn't happen. But listen, I'm telling you, it did.
You spent the whole night in the tree.
No. I was only up there. I saw the police coming in, and I knew they was after me because I done got in trouble.
I see.
And so I climbed that tree before they got to our motel room.
Yeah.
And I was only about 10 feet above them. So when it cooled off and the police left, I come down out of the tree. But my buddy that they knocked on the door, he said, "No, he's already gone to Texas." So the next morning, Mr. Preston folks was at a continental breakfast at this little motel. He come up to me and he gave me my entry fee back and said, "Son, you don't need to be here tonight." He said, "They're going to get you." And sure enough, somebody else mounted out my bull, but they announced him as Ernie Roberts. He gets smacked in the face by this bull, and before the bull left the arena, five cops hauled him out.
Oh my gosh.
He had to prove he wasn't Ernie Roberts.
Oh my goodness.
And I was worried about that. But it's such precious memories. And all my cowboy friends took up. They wasn't going to let me go to jail. I even had the Arnold family offer me their vehicle, you know.
And Liesl wasn't afraid to get in a scrap.
No. Forest bullfighting?
No, I'm talking street fighting.
Hey, let me tell you something. Lacy Harris was not only a person of good wisdom, but he was he could have been a pro football player. He was a good athlete. He was fast. He's about 6'3" or 6'4" or 6-something. And I mean, you just didn't walk up to him and hit him, because he'd get in your nest. I'm telling you, I've seen him do it. Yeah. You know, one time, I think it was Montgomery, some guy was messing with his act or something like that, and Lacy jerked him out of the stands in the arena. Didn't hurt him or nothing, you know. Yeah. Lacy had some, he had such dignity and wisdom about himself, you know.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget that, you know. He was a great man.
Great man. Absolutely great man. And you talked about your son, John. Big deal bullfighter. Talk a little bit about how he got started. Was that his interest? Was he a bull rider first? How do you find your way to bullfighting?
Well, I had gotten away from rodeo for about 8 or 9 years. John come along, and you know, and as he got older, I'd come home from work in law enforcement, and I would see him with my old picture book out. He'd be sitting on the couch, arms spurring snot out of it. Well, finally, he got to the age he wanted to do mutton busting. I said, okay. We had a little deal down the road, and we went down to the mutton busting. And he loved it so much that later on, after he got in junior rodeo, some of his friends, Corey Bailey, 4-time IPRA world champion, they all started riding right there at our arena in Friendship, Tennessee. They'd come over, and the next week there'd be a bunch more, and I finally had to start leasing enough stock to keep everybody accommodated for junior-type bulls. Well, as this went on, John began to step in front of some of the bulls. They weren't all mean or wasn't bad boys, so they were junior-type bulls, and he learned to step around them. And he loved it. Then his sophomore year, John went from like 6 foot to 6'4". Well, after he went to college at Martin for a year, following me, he come home and he said, Dad, I don't think I'm going to ride bulls no more. I said, well, son, I don't blame you. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, new truck, new trailer, because he could rope too. He was a good time to vendor. I said, here we go. This is going to cost, you know. So he said, no, I'm going to start fighting bulls. I said, full time? He said, yeah. I said, son, you've just jumped out of the skillet into the fire. But the first competition he entered, he won. And then he began to improve and increase. And today he's working for the Bullfighters Tour. And what he does, he coordinates the fighting bulls and the bullfighters, and then makes sure the added money is right. And he's in charge of rodeos around the Southeast for the bullfighting tour. Okay. And then John would still be fighting bulls, except for one or two things. Number one, John shipwrecked his knee real bad a couple of years ago, almost beyond repair.
Now, wait a minute. Shipwrecked? Is that the word I just heard?
Yeah, because it's almost beyond repair.
Shipwrecked.
Know. Shipwrecked.
Okay, yeah, I've not heard that term before.
Edmund Fitzgerald, shipwrecked, you know. But as he did, he got married, and now he's got two children. And this opportunity to work for the Bullfighters Tour come along, and he does real well at it. Yeah. And, you know, his bullfighting career is basically, as far as getting in front of himself, is basically over, but his heart and his love and his try. And John is an ordained minister, and I kid my wife all the time because I'm meaner junkyard dog. I say, I believe the milkman come by while I wasn't here.
Oh, no.
I am proud of him, and I have my other son, Mikey, who just got out of the Marines, and my daughter.
Oh, wow.
So
thank you for
my
service.
Bottom line in all this, through my little bit of cowboy ministry, which I don't do a lot of, I let ordained ministers handle the program.
Sure.
You know, the good Lord has been good to me.
You bet.
I can say.
You bet.
I don't really deserve what I've seen, you know.
Yeah. Say a little more.
I said, I don't really deserve what I've seen the Lord do in my life. I don't feel like I do, you know.
Okay.
But at the same time, it strengthens us. You know, it makes us better people. And there's more to rodeo if you just open your eyes and look down the road than just learning to ride bulls or horses or be safe and learn the fundamentals of rodeoing. And, you know, I value that so much. And like this reunion, you get to see the people you come up with. And they remember old Ernie being meaner than a junkyard dog. Because I'd fight a rattlesnake and I'd, You know, but during them years, the good Lord had enough sense to me to take care of me when I wasn't the person I ought to be.
Yeah, yeah.
My mother used to put a comb in my pocket, and she'd drag me by the hair of the head into church. And then when we got in, she'd hand me the comb, so they'd comb your hair. But thank the good Lord she did that.
Yeah, you know? Good upbringing. Good upbringing, good
support.
Well,
it's been... Like I said, I'm 70 now, and, you know, I'm a old fart, excuse my language, I'm an old person. And,
yeah.
You know, it's so important to me today to look around at these kids coming up, because our world and our culture today, they need mentors, they need solid foundations. They just don't have the parental guidance that even I had growing up.
Yeah.
And I see it.
Yeah.
I see it all the time.
You bet.
But this roar of the rodeo, I'm kind of slowing down now myself, and John is too a little bit. But we're still active. I've had some of the best instructors in the world, my ass. Dennis Morris, four-time IPRA world champion. I remember when Dennis started riding bulls. He was one of the best teachers I ever had. Dennis's voice is loud. He's attentive to the kids, and he gets in that buck and shoot. So a lot of teachers will want to video everything and make it easy to teach them, but to get in that chute, show a kid how to tie his knot, show a kid how to move a big bull around with just your knees, you know, you can't replace that.
You bet.
There's nothing that can replace experience.
Yeah.
And you have quite a program, and you've had quite a number of students that have come through. One that comes to mind, Hudson Bolton. We saw him this year at the IFR. My goodness, what was he, 80,000 all in for the year or something like that?
Well, you know, Hudson started riding bulls at my house when he was 13 years old. Myself, Bud Young from Northwest Mississippi, we looked at him and said, that boy's got it. And a lot of it was his natural talent and ability. But the rest of it was his mental attitude. I'm going to tell you, I've been more impressed with him than just, I can't put him over everybody, but he is a standout, not only bull rider, but he's a standout human. And then he asked me about going on to join the Mavericks, you know, PBR deal. And I said, well, Hudson, you know, I'd rather you wait, run at that Rookie of the Year this year in the PRCA and CA do, but I got to be honest, if they had offered me at 70 years old the money they offered him, I believe I'd get my rope back out.
Yeah, you know, yeah,
I think
for
I
sure.
Probably wouldn't.
So what, how would you describe, I mean, it sounds like the perfect combination, the talent and the mindset, and we come back to this a lot, and you picked up a lot of elements and a lot of information when you was at UT Martin. From a coaching side, I can hear that coming through as you talk. How do you describe the mental attitude that a champion like Hudson Bolton has? How do you describe it?
Always trying to do better in every situation. You know, I got to meet Lane Frost. And Lane, like I told you before, it takes, in my opinion, three things to be very successful. Some kids have it and some don't. You know, and Hudson, Lane Frost. Now, Lane he never rode at my house. He was already gone when I started our pen. But I met Lane when he was 15 years old. He was entered in the novice bull riding at Cheyenne one year, and when I was entered in the big bull riding. And then when he got in the PRCA a few years later, he stayed with us, myself and George Meesmer, former IPRA cowboy, at Martin while we were going to college there. And we would go to Paris, Tennessee, and some other rodeos where they had the fish fry and all. And I got to meet him and spend a little time with him. Well, what I've seen over the years, characters like him who have the personality, they have the try, the want to, the desire, and the wisdom to polish all this, that's where you've got come up with a world champion. You know, some of them have different personalities, but yeah, I mean, Glenn Bird, I loved him. He was such a beautiful bull rider. But when you talk to Glenn, he got a personality like a dial tone on a telephone. It's just because he wasn't as outgoing.
I see.
You know, he wasn't a politician. He just rode bulls. And
yeah.
He was, to me, He's one of the prettiest bull riders I ever seen.
Yeah.
I couldn't ride like him. I couldn't ride like Larry Mahan, because each person has to learn their own body. Because a guy 5'11 is not going to ride like a guy 5'8 or 9. Mm-hmm. You don't have the same centrifugal movement or body, and you know, but. Mm-hmm. And so I couldn't ride that way. I chased a lot of ropes is what I did, but I was able to make a few whistles, you know.
You bet. You bet. And you rode full-time PRCA early 80s?
Probably from 76 and 77 up until 84. The Camden, Missouri is the last rodeo entered in 85, I think it was, Camden. And had a bull up there. Donnie Gay won the bull riding on him, and I won like third, you know. But that's okay. I was just glad to make that last, because I knew that'd be the last rodeo.
You knew that was the last rodeo?
Yeah, that was it.
Why'd you make the decision to quit?
Because every time I got on, it seemed like something else was happening. I mean, far as injuries, I was very fortunate in my riding career. I never got hurt bad till the last 2 years I rode. I had 3 shoulder operations, a knee and an elbow in 3 years. And I'm thinking, Ern, you know, it might be time to do something different. And then I moved in with a fellow I wasn't married at the time, who was a law enforcement investigator. And I realized that adrenaline flow in law enforcement that I miss riding bulls. You know, when you get on a bull and that adrenaline's flowing, you slide down there and tighten that hand. You know, you have to have that ready-to-go killer instinct. And it ain't something you can think about and learn there. You have to prefab. You have to make it instinctive. You have to be able to do it. Like when a ball batter's standing up there, he's going to hit the ball, baseball. And that ball's coming at him 90 miles an hour. He doesn't have time to think, this is a curveball. By the time he gets that thought out, it's already back to the pitcher. It's a reaction, and mm-hmm. that's what bull riding is.
Yeah,
it's reaction. Being able to feel the muscles, and you know, it's just reaction.
Yeah, and you bring up a great point. We had Dennis Morris on the show earlier this year. I think it was back in June we had him on the show. And one of the things he said, and it's right in line with what you're talking about, he said, if you got a riding problem, you don't fix it on the back of the bull.
Oh, no.
His advice was you fix it laying in bed thinking about it, or driving down the road. Focus on it, because it's all that instinct that you
Absolutely.
Talked about. You got to reprogram just a bit.
Well, Dennis Morris, in my mind, could have been another person that could have been a PRCA world champion, Canadian world champion, anywhere he wanted to go. Dennis Morris was a great hand, and he was a cowboy. I don't put everybody in that category. I wasn't a cowboy. Even at my age now, my wife has taught me some stuff about cowboy and horses and all, but I was a bull rider.
Mm-hmm.
Now, somebody says, well, how did you get into bull riding if you wasn't ever around it? I said, you ever heard of Bobby Del Vecchio from the Bronx, New York? Meatball, a.k.a. me. I loved him. Me and him, he was a great guy.
How did you meet him? When did you meet him?
I met him at Madison Square Garden at a Longhorn Rodeo, okay. Loretta Lynn's Rodeo.
Early 80s.
Yes.
Yeah.
Martin was there. Well, he was there, you know. And I ain't even never hardly been out of Tennessee, let alone all the way to New York City. Man, I saw some things in that big town. I wanted to stay, but they wouldn't let me.
Yeah. So describe Bobby Del Vecchio for us.
Bobby was all, in my opinion, now I wasn't around him as much as I have been some of my friends at rodeo.
Yeah.
Bobby was, you could tell he had an air about him that wasn't cocky, wasn't arrogant. He just had a confidential air about himself, and he was always pleasant, polite. Now, Bobby would, if you offended him, don't think that little dude wouldn't fight.
Oh,
I know
that right.
Would.
Okay.
But to treat him respectable,
yeah,
he would treat you respectable.
Okay.
And that's what I appreciate. That's what I remember about him.
Okay.
Then when it come to the riding, he might just ride anything he got on. You mm-hmm. could never count Bobby mm-hmm. Del Vecchio out.
Mm-hmm.
But during them years when Donnie was dominating everything, I can name you 3 or 4 people that could have maybe won another title or two, except they just didn't draw the right bull.
Yeah.
I mean, it was fair. It
and he was, and Bobby was one of them?
Bobby was one of them.
Yeah.
Bobby Del Vecchio, I think he wound up 2nd 1 year, maybe, if I remember right.
You bet.
But he could have very well won.
And that was a big deal, coming out of the Bronx, coming from the East. There's no bull riders out
Well, that's
east.
Like Jeff Ashby. You know, Jeff came up through the IPRA, went to school at Martin, worked for my friend up there, had the buck and stock and all.
Yep.
He had caught call me two or three times. Are we bucking tonight? I'm coming down. Yeah. I only live 45 minutes now from Martin.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's because they had that desire and that want to be better.
You bet.
And I've seen so many young bull riders today that had the ability, they had the talent, but they just didn't have the want to.
And,
they,
you know, yeah, and you speak of Jeff Askey. Yep. Comes out of Pennsylvania.
Absolutely.
I saw him as a junior in high school.
Really?
In Benton, Pennsylvania. I announced a high school rodeo up there. He and the family, and oh my goodness, and he was his senior year, we knew he was headed to UT Martin.
Yeah. Jeff, you can't say enough nice things about him because he's one of them people that had the character. He had the fundamentals of rodeo. He had the athletic aspect of it. He had the try and he had the want to. And he has had a pretty long and good career.
Crazy career. He just split the win up in Calgary, right? What, 37 years old? How's that possible, Ernie?
Well, you know, bull riding. I had a kid ask me at the practice pen here a while back. Said, "Mr. Ernie, when you getting on the bull?" And I said, "When I accidentally sat on my hamburger at McDonald's." So you can say I got on a bull.
Once a bull rider, always a bull rider.
Well, in your heart, you know. Yeah. But I did get on one. I'm 70 now, but I got on one about 10 years ago.
Really?
But 60. I was very selective about what I got on.
And? Like riding a bicycle?
Well, he was a little muley, and he didn't buck a whole lot. So, but the thing about it is, yes, I rode him, but dadgum, I hurt for a week after that.
All kinds of muscles.
Oh, yeah.
All kinds. So when you decide to break out and go to the PRCA, you'd been in the IPRA, and IPRA was good to you.
Sure.
Right?
Yes.
Who'd you jump with? Who was your crew? Who'd you haul with?
Well, I grew up with a young man named David Phelps, Jamie Phelps, and Joey Franklin. And we started rodeoing at some of Preston's and other IPR, Ralph Hedrick up here in Ringo. And then we met Marlon the next year. And Marlon and myself and Joey and David, we all kind of traveled together. And then there were times I rode to Florida with Jerry Bellis. I was entered here and there you know, there were times when we all kind of got split up.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we'd all go down to David Morgan's in Florida, and we had some great times. Fact is, David Morgan's rodeo sent me to college. My mother had got me in. All the Pell Grants, the books, everything. I didn't have no money in my pocket to go to college. Mm-hmm. Yeah, Martin, this is from Georgia. And that last rodeo I went to, I had a very dangerous bull of David Morgan's. His number was 21. They called him Rogue. He's the bull that knocked out Troy Powell, great horse trader in Nashville. He knocked his eye out while he was riding him right in the middle of it.
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I didn't have any choice. College started next week. There was never a doubt to turn the bull. I wasn't going to do it. I was going to get on him and try him. However, I knew his bucking style wasn't going to fit my riding style.
Yeah.
I was just going to try. Well, when I got back to the rodeo, we went to the motels about 3, checked in, went and ate, came back to the performance about 6. And David Morgan comes walking up to me. He says, "What'd you do to my bull, Ernie?" You know how them Floridians talk. What'd you do to my bull? I said, "What are you talking about?" He said, "Look at his knee." And it was about the size of a basketball. He said, "Did you slip out here and hit him with a hammer so you wouldn't have to get on him?" I said, "No, I didn't think about that, but I might have had." He said, "Well, that's all right. You got helicopter." And it was such a relief to me because I just seen Glenn Bird win Atlanta Decatur on that little black Brangus. And I thought, this, you know, he may buck me off, but the fear factor's gone, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wound up winning the bull ride, and I won about $1,200.
Holy
cow. And $1,200 back then was a bunch of money.
Yeah.
And that's what sent me to school at Martin. And David Morgan, he always was very, after that, he was very respectable for me, to
nice.
Me, and
nice.
Helped me.
Nice.
You know. And but that's what I'm saying. It wasn't just one or two people in my early rodeo days. There were so many of them. David Duke, ex-Bulldogger, now Horseshoer, well was, you know. And there's so many great people. Aubrey Floyd, Charlie Lowry, all them guys that were, you know, around from this area that were so instrumental. And every once in a while, a good friend that I respected and didn't think I could whoop, he'd jerk me up and he'd say, "Ernie, don't do that. Don't go to no bars. Don't start no fights.
Really?
You know,
okay.
Yeah. And that was people like Bill Legg from Alabama, former IPRA champion, Charlie Lowry from right over here at Somerville, and, you know, some very instrumental people that helped me realize that there's other things in the world besides your own tunnel vision. You know?
Yeah.
And people kind of get, I'm great, and they get stuck on themselves.
Yeah, yeah. So,
and that's something I'd never want to do.
Good,
I want to be humble and thank everybody. You know?
You bet. So you go west, and all of a sudden you're entering the big shows, Denver, Cheyenne, Houston, you name it. You're going, and you're going hard.
We went to one year, we went to 30 rodeos in the month of July.
One rodeo a day, basically.
Basically. And there were some places we had a day off, but we had to go ride like at Cheyenne the afternoon. We was in Salt Lake City that morning in the slack, then Salinas, California that night. And I was traveling then with Danny Whiteley, Kenny Wilcox. And, you know, it got to the point where, you know, who cares what this bull does? It's another bull, another rodeo. You don't even want to know what they do. You just get there, get on, ride.
Yeah.
But that was one of the greatest years. And I've had them guys, Kenny and Denny both. I got out of their truck in August at Sykeston, Missouri. We just finished Sykeston. And I got out of that truck, and they both looked at me and said, Ernie, we know what you're going to do. You're going back. You're going to go back to that sweet little girlfriend you got who's now my wife.
Okay.
And they're going to say, you're going to stay right there around the southeast. Said, you're going to go to circuit finals. You're going to probably win it.
Yeah.
But you might win a trip to the NFR if you stay healthy. We'll get you there if you stay healthy.
And you were in the points. You were in the running.
At that time, I was about 29.
29. Got to be in top 15.
Yes, and this was in August.
And this was doable.
Yeah, it was. I'd had drawn some good bulls and really been finishing my business.
Yeah.
But by that time, I wasn't used to rodeoing like them guys was. I was getting burnt out. I missed my girlfriend at home, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I wanted to come home, and they knew me well enough to know that if I come home, I probably wouldn't get. I was supposed to got back in the truck with them a few weeks later to finish out the season. We were going some other rodeos, some big ones. And I just stayed at home. You know, of course, I did go to the Southeast Circuit Finals, and I won it there. I won the finals again.
Okay, okay.
And, but I didn't win the Southeast Circuit Championship. Leander Fry won it that year.
I see.
And Leander was a great bull rider. He's from down in Louisiana.
Okay. And you mentioned Donnie Gay. You mentioned Bobby Del Vecchio. Who else do you rub elbows with?
Well, I got to meet so many great people. Randy Majors, Denny Flynn, and these guys, you know, it wasn't really any different. When I look around at people like Dennis Morris and them guys, they could have been in the same place the same time. And like I said, rodeoing is an athletic event, and athletics, it don't matter where you're from. If you can run, chew, and play gum a ball at the same time, you know, but some other heroes of mine that I got to meet along the way, you know, great bullfighter Rob Schmitz, Miles Hare. I mean, just some of the guys that I was around some. Joe Wimberly, he's from Florida, and he wound up doing real well. And, I mean, there were just so many. You can't name them all.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, back in the IPRA days, there was Glenn Bird, Arnold Bird, Sody Fleming. You ever heard of Sody Fleming?
No.
Ask Marlin about him.
Okay.
he was a great guy.
Okay.
But Jack Wiseman, Red Doffman, and them guys, they were my heroes.
Yeah.
And I mean, I had so much respect for them because of what they did.
Yeah.
I learned some of what not to do.
Yeah. And I think you want to add a fourth element. You know, you talk about your three elements. I think you want to add a fourth element, and that's being able to stay out on the road. The road is tough.
Oh, you know, you get out there and, you know, keeping up with your own expenses. And the hardest thing about being on the road is maintaining your mental attitude. You get burnt out, you're running low of money, then you hit a good lick and you're fine for a few weeks.
Yeah.
But the most important aspect to me about being on the road is learning to manage yourself, your money, and your attitude.
Yeah.
That is so important.
And that can get tough. You get into a slump, you know, and you know you haven't forgotten how to ride bulls. Yeah. Would the crew you were running with, would they help you with that a bit?
Absolutely. And like I said, the most important thing when you're out there on the road and you're winning, and then all of a sudden you buck off two or three bulls in a row and you look in the mirror and say, what am I doing wrong? Hey, dude, with as much experience as you've got, you ain't doing nothing wrong except at the right time during the 8-second ride, you was in the wrong position. How many times have you ever been into your hand or away from your hand and something happened and you're right back in the middle of it? You know, that's what I'm saying. It's a lot of you may have got bucked off that bull before because of that being in that bad position.
Yeah.
But you learn to try, and you keep trying, and you keep that attitude. And peers in rodeos are so important to you.
Okay.
Because when you make a ride, sometimes it don't matter if you're 69, 79, or 99.
Mm-hmm.
When you, like I told you before, when you walk back and you reach down there and undo them chaps, you look up there on the buck and shoot, and there's your best friends and buds. That peer factor, if everybody is pulling for you. And that's why sometimes when you see, and I would never say names, but some little cocky bull rider come in there, he said, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. Well, if he does this or that, they will lift him up and support him, and he'll be a hero. But you just watch him buck off coming in there and bragging on how good he's going to be.
Yeah.
His own peers will be his worst enemies, you know.
I mean,
because cowboys, it's hard to trick a cowboy. Now, I'm telling you, they're like police officers, and I spent 20 years being a cop. But it's been such a great blessing to me to be introduced to the cowboy world.
So you mentioned, and I wanted to get back to this, and this is perfect, being a police officer, being a cop, in your words, you talked about the adrenaline rush from riding bulls, and you made a reference that maybe being a police officer could get you that adrenaline rush too?
Well, you know, if you're sitting out there with a SWAT team, for example, and you're fixing to kick in a door, a resident, somewhere, and do a search warrant, you never know what's on the other side of that door. And when you kick that door in and you announce yourself, all legal manner, search warrant, police officers, now the person on the other side of the door, you have to be able to assess real quick, is this person, is he dangerous, or is he bad, or is he mental? And what is you have to assess it quick as you can, because, you know, you have somebody suffering dementia or something, and, you know, you got to see a weapon. So what I'm saying is, all these things, before you go in that resident, this adrenaline flow, it's the same as when you're warming up that rope in a chute. You're reaching over there, rosin up that rope, and that old lump kind of comes up in your throat. Okay, it's now. It's you. You're going to keep yourself from getting hurt. You're going to do what you need to do.
Yeah.
And going back, it's just like you've been trained to react in certain ways in law enforcement. Well, over the years, you've trained yourself how to respond in certain bull deals.
You bet.
Now, riding a bull, you can't always control it. Sometimes you might make a beautiful ride and a beautiful dismount. Sometimes you may be so glad to hear that whistle at the end of it, you just let go and get pissed up 14 foot in the air.
Yeah, you know? And I was going to ask, and you kind of just referenced it, what did you learn in the bull riding that you've been able to take, that you took with you into being a police officer?
Just that try and that determination to survive, mainly with them two, because bull riding's dangerous, and sometimes being a police officer, especially today.
Yeah, and they're saying domestic violence, man, when you're answering a call like that.
Every day. Now, I hadn't been in it since 2010.
Okay.
That's when I retired.
Yeah.
I still miss it. I miss the camaraderie of police officers.
Yeah.
And that's something I compare with cowboys, the camaraderie, the tea parties we used to have,
sure,
the get-togethers.
Sure.
And just like law enforcement, there's a few people that ruffle your feathers and you have, you know, incidents with, not nothing mean or violent, but you just don't get along with everybody.
Sure.
As well as in law enforcement. But I have found that most of these law enforcement people and cowboys, do what we're doing here. It's a lifetime friendship and a bond that can never be broken.
You bet. You
know?
You bet.
You just watch it. If somebody come in to you that cowboys don't know, he get to mouthing and being ugly or something, they gonna punch him in the nose.
They're going
to
take care of it,
aren't
they?
You let him come in there and you let him run his little course or whatever he does, and if he's taking up for the Cowboys, nobody will say a word. They'll welcome him.
Okay.
But you let him ruffle one,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
because they stand together. They yeah. believe in each other.
You bet.
Know? And that's been such a bond. That's just like me and Marlon. I got some funny stories about him, too. One time we was down at Altoona Lake, I think, and down where he lives. We was at a rodeo IPRA deal down there. And Marlon loved the water. He loved to ski, if you know Marlon, you know. And so he said, come on, Ernest, go skiing. Well, I could ski somewhat, but I certainly wasn't as good as him because he did it all the time. So we was out there on the thing, and I was skiing along. Now, he said, drop one. Okay. I tried to drop one, but I really wiped out, and the ski popped me in the forehead, and I had a big old cut on it. Wasn't deep. Wasn't bad. And so I got back in the boat, and he wrapped me up. Had a towel wrapped around my head, and I looked like the Sheikh Arab going across the lake. Martin said, no, we can't go in now. He said, I hadn't got to ski. I said, Martin, I got to get on a bull of Preston folks named LSD tonight. And I said, I'm bleeding like a stuck hog. He said, you look just like the Sheikh Arab. Go ahead. I was going across. But it was all part of the camaraderie,
yeah.
the bond, the
yeah.
I mean, you know, it's something I've been blessed with all these years,
yeah,
you know, the friendship, yeah. Mike Fletcher, you know, all them guys, they were my heroes because, you know, they
you
could
bet.
Not only win rodeoing, but they won hearts, you know.
And talking about winning, you made a comment before we sat down. We're sitting over here on the sofa in the bus, and you made a comment that you didn't, how'd you say it, didn't learn to win until late or something like that.
Well, I learned to ride a little bit, but after I got to school at Martin and really started studying these other guys, what it took to win and what it really requested of you, the main thing I did was I learned how to apply myself,
okay.
how to apply, how to get, if you've drawn a bull that you don't really like and he is dangerous or something, sometimes you'll step back and worry about that rather than just getting on him, turning your toes out, take your rap, do him just like you do every other bull you get on.
Mm-hmm.
Because some bulls are going to be so great and unrideable, but they're going to have a bad day.
Yeah.
Some cowboys are going to be so great and so unthrowable,
mm-hmm.
but they're going to have a bad day.
Nice.
So you never know riding bulls. I mean, every great bull gets his day.
Yeah.
And who's to say, you know?
Yeah.
So if you get on with a bad attitude or you're a little worried or nervous,
yeah.
can't do that.
Yeah.
Can't
yeah.
do that.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
just got to get your head clear. You make up your mind. You want to be a bull rider. You want to pay the price. Here's what it's going to take.
Okay.
You don't have to be cocky about it. But learn to believe in yourself.
You bet.
There was a book a while back by Maxwell. What was his name?
Maxwell Maltz.
Yes, called Psycho-Cybernetics.
Psycho-Cybernetics.
Probably.
Gary LaFue carried it around.
Absolutely. Probably one of the most encouraging books I ever read. And it wasn't only for athletic performance. It was life in general. And I believe that's about the time, like I said before, I was kind of a wild child, but the good Lord had a couple of anger management classes with me. And the last one he had, I tried to listen.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. Well, that's interesting you bring that up. I mean, that's late 60s. That's 70s when that book
yep.
came out. And a very instrumental book, to your point, to
right.
the bull riders.
Absolutely. Not just bull riders, but, you know, they begin to critique and they begin to analyze and they begin to, when Larry Mahan come along, it became more than just a bunch of old rough riders at a rodeo. It's a science. It's an art. It's an ability. Good equipment, you know. And all these things just, I guess, from the 60s all the way up to today, equipment is better. And the breeding programs with buck and stock is phenomenal today. Everybody and his brother owns a piece of a buck and bull somewhere or something. And the thing that I appreciate more than anything else is the world of rodeo is being the world of it's being educated by our TV, the Cowboy Channel.
Yep.
They cover the IPRA final. They cover, there's so many people that now, hey, you know, well, this rodeo is a sport, you know,
yep.
and team
yep.
deals. And I'm just so honored to still be a part of it in my way.
Yeah.
I know when it's time to step down.
And you're still involved. You're still working with these young bull riders
yes.
coming through.
Absolutely.
Who are you working with these days? You name names, don't name names. It's up to you. And what's the program? How are you approaching it these days?
Well, first thing you do when a parent calls me and says, hey, our boy's 14 years old. He's wanting to learn to ride bulls. Well, I don't know these people. I say, well, if y'all would drop by, you can see the arena and the bucking chutes and all what all we do, the bulls. And I said, I want to meet the young man interested in riding. I want to talk to him. It don't take long to kind of find out if it's a young man will just want to bring his girlfriend and get a picture or if he's really serious about riding bulls. Got a young man named Colt Robinson right now. He's 14 years old. He's going to be a winner.
Mm-hmm.
Cade Maxton. He's another kid. He's 14, too.
Mm-hmm.
We went to Savannah to the IPRA rodeo this year, and they got to get on some bulls because it's the only junior bulls they buck during the rodeo, and we gave them some awards. And what it does, it lets the fans in the rodeo know about these young guns coming up.
Yeah.
Because everybody's got to start somewhere.
You bet.
But I've been very blessed with the kids and the parents and the things we do at our arena.
Yeah, and a lot of greats have come through your arena. We talked about Hudson Bolton, yeah. Ty Hickerson.
Ty was a little bit before we started the arena. Ty, but he's always been cowboy and coming over to help me and shoeing horses. And Ty's a cowboy, simple
mm-hmm.
as that.
Mm-hmm.
But when he won his IPRA world title, I was still kind of helping Summit Martin, and we didn't even have our pen built then. But, there's been Ty Hickerson, Ty Cobb, so many of these young men that are now saying, well, where can my son go learn to ride bulls? Take him over to the Cowboys for Christ Arena, Friendship, Tennessee.
Mm-hmm.
And, the people, they're just overwhelmed. When they come in, they sit around, listen to us play some guitars and make some noise. It's a relaxing environment. The kids get along easier, and they're not worried about things. And you introduce them.
Yeah.
To the world of bull riding.
Yeah.
Talk about their equipment. Talk
yeah.
about, just sit there and get, make them want to.
Okay.
You got to develop that want to in
mm-hmm.
a bull rider.
Because mm-hmm.
like I said before, that is the most important ingredient about riding bulls.
And that can be developed.
It can somewhat.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a little bit of talent and a little bit of ability.
Yeah.
Because what you're lacking in them areas is, you know, you can make up for it through that attitude and that true grit. And by golly, it's me. It's time to ride a bull
mm-hmm.
and be aggressive.
Mm-hmm.
I guess is what I'm saying.
You bet. And what's 2025 looking like for you, Rob? Ernie.
Well, Doug, I'm slowing down myself,
mm-hmm.
and we got a clinic coming up about October, sometime in October. It's a 2-day clinic, and to answer your question, I still ride, rope a little bit, not much.
Mm-hmm.
I still ride horses, not bulls. But we still cowboy a little bit. Me
mm-hmm.
and my wife and the kids come over
mm-hmm.
and we have skull sessions sometimes where we come and watch videos. And I'll sit there on a widescreen TV in my barn and say, see what he's doing?
Mm-hmm.
See why he's doing that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and the main thing is a young man will let his head just come up and drift around because
mm-hmm.
he don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
And you have to transfer that into try.
You have to mentally
just like getting hit with a hot shot.
Yeah.
Boy, it'll get your attention.
You bet. Skull sessions.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it. So how do they get a hold of you?
We got basically Facebook,
because
I do a lot of stuff on Facebook, and I usually announce when we're having an event or a practice or something, and then by word of mouth. I
mm-hmm.
mean, it's it's you know, word of mouth goes a long way, especially where I live in West Tennessee, because most everybody goes to the high school, the junior, the youth rodeos, and you know, it's just word of mouth. Well, yeah. What's Ernie doing this weekend?
Yeah.
But today, the biggest difference is, Doug, there are so many practice pens with everybody owning stock. When I started my pen in 2005, actual practice sessions and schools, I was the only pen in West Tennessee. Now I can name you about five or six pens within 30 miles of my house with bucking stock.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, you know, like I said, God's been good to me.
Yeah.
And there's a time to slow down, step down.
Yeah. And what's cowboy poetry look like for you for this rest of this year? What do you got? What do you got for gigs?
Well, I worked the Williamson County Fair with some good singers and entertainers, and I've got two more gigs to do later in November. And basically, what I do, I enjoy the cowboy scene and the poetry, and I met a good friend recently named Woody Woodruff, and I'm telling you, he's good too. Mm-hmm. But what I try to do when I have some cowboy poetry scheduled or somebody asks us to come in, rather than me stand up and do poems for an hour and a half, I have a duet called Raising Cain. It's a man and wife team. They sing anything from Dale Evans to Roy Rogers. I mean, they do country music and all kinds of other music.
Mm-hmm.
And then the young lady that's coming down today, she'll be here at the Cove after a while. Nikki McLeod is her name, and she's a hand too. Team roper, welder. I mean, she's a cowgirl.
Yeah.
But she's also a picker and a greener.
Okay.
So, you know, I've got a few events. I don't really push it much right now. I mean, somebody calls, we'll go, you know, bring the crew. But I enjoy it.
Yeah.
And the people have been so good to us. But I really enjoy it. You know,
okay.
I'm not no Baxter Black by no means, but it's been rewarding
good,
to me. You
good.
Know?
Creative outlet. Good to be in that. So a couple rapid fire questions for you. Okay. First thing comes to mind. How do you take your coffee?
A little sugar.
Just sugar?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. If you was going to start a podcast, what would you call it?
Rambling. If I was going to start one, Rambling with Ernie. That's what I'd call it.
And who'd be your first guest?
I would love to interview Denny Flynn.
Denny Flynn.
I would love to interview Dennis Morse. I would enjoy talking to John Clark. And I would like to ask them, what is the biggest difference in today and yesterday other than the money, you know?
So answer that question.
What now?
Answer the question you would ask them.
Other than the money?
Yeah.
Well, my thinking is, first and foremost, there's so many more people learning about rodeo, getting interested in rodeo through our social media, TV, and things like that, that people that have a little money and want to invest it, they just don't know they ain't going to get rich overnight rodeoing.
Yeah.
But they will. They'll go invest in rodeo equipment, bucking shoots, livestock, and things of that nature. But it's also, there's so many people today that are because, once again, I mean, I remember back when Mesquite first come out. I'll tell you this, Donnie Gay and Mesquite educated the world on rodeo back when they first started.
Yeah, Pam Minnick.
Yes, absolutely, you know, and Miller. But they really educated the rodeo.
Yeah.
Now, sometimes Donnie was a little bit opinionated.
Yeah.
And, you know, that hurt him a little, but not bad.
Not bad.
Because anybody that really knew Donnie knew he wasn't really, you know, that way.
Yeah.
Donnie was just one of them guys that if you got on bulls and you didn't try, he knew what it took to ride bulls.
Right.
And he didn't have a lot of respect for a guy that ain't going to try, period. You know.
You bet.
Regardless of the reason.
Yeah. So here's another question. If you could spend one day with any rodeo athlete, living or not, who would it be?
I'd have to say Lane Frost, because Lane, even though I didn't know him when he was younger on such a personal basis, I did, and I met his mother and father, and they do a high school ministry. But I just really like to kind of see what makes Lane tick, you know, in bad situations, because that's where your true colors come out. Mm-hmm. When people talk bad about you, what you going to do, go slap them or something?
No, you
ain't going to do that.
Yeah.
And sometimes I say, well, sticks and stones don't break your bones. No, but I tell you what, Doug, they hurt. They hurt.
Yeah, they
you
do.
Can't get around that.
They do.
And there's a lot of people, cowboys and other people, that football players, they, you know, people just naturally like to say things to sometimes make themselves feel superior.
Sure.
And you see that. It ain't hard to be a wannabe cowboy. I got a poem about that, too.
Okay.
The wannabe cowboy.
Wannabe
see,
cowboy.
You just go buy you a buckle, and you go around to the bar and tell everybody how good you are. And there's a song about that, too. Don't call him a cowboy till you've seen him ride.
Right. I like that.
Yeah.
Best advice you ever received and who gave it to you?
I would have to say Freckles Brown, because what he told me, he said, if you love to ride bulls, he said, there's going to be times when you got bucked off that you know in your heart you should have rode that bull. There's going to be times when the judges say, nope, you slapped him. When you know in your heart you did not foul that bull, but there's going to be times when you did slap one that they didn't see.
Right.
There's going to be times when you got a whistle when you didn't think you made the whistle.
Yeah.
So by the time you get on halfway down your career, you're going to be at even.
Okay.
You're going to be equal. Everything
okay.
is going to work out,
okay.
you know.
Okay.
And that's the best advice. I was sitting in Sikeston, Missouri, judging a rodeo with Freckles Brown. And this was in 1981, I believe. And I got to stay in the motel room with him. The stock contractor, Dale Hall, he said, I had to call and draw out because I cracked a bone in my hand. He said, well, you got a card? I got a judging card. He said, well, you want to judge? I said, how many performances? He said, 10. I said, how much does it pay? He said, $100 per.
Wow.
Put me in, coach. I know the play. So he said, well, are you bringing your wife? I said, no, I'll be by myself. He said, well, I'll put you in the room with the other judge so I won't have to buy two rooms. I didn't even ask him who the other judge was. When I got there, it was Freckles Brown. And I got to spend 10 days, 9 nights with the most down-to-earth, quality, funny, he was humorous, always something funny, person I've ever been around in my life. And he was so instrumental in helping me not become just another old wannabe cowboy. He put the fire in me, you know, to be what he was. He was my mentor. He was my hero.
Okay. And many of our listeners may not know who Freckles Brown is. And, you know, there's been a few names over history, over rodeo history. Because he competed, what, 40s and 50s? 50s and 60s?
Freckles was actually riding in the middle 70s, but not on
at,
a regular
at like
basis.
40-some years old, right?
No, he was. The last time I saw him ride, he was 54, and he won Memphis, Tennessee.
Right.
Yes, I'm serious.
So big name, you know, and Casey Tibbs comes to mind, and Larry Mahan for sure, Donnie Gay, these names, these marquee names, and Freckles Brown was one of those guys.
Yes, I knew Freckles more than I knew the rest of them. Now, Larry, I met him before in Florida at some rodeos, and he was a great guy, too. But as far as humility and character, Freckles Brown was just, I mean, he was the same with everybody, you know, everybody. He had an old cowbell in his car at Sikeston, and he drove a little Vega station wagon all the way from Soper to judge a rodeo. Every morning I'd get in it, and there was McDonald's. He loved McDonald's. There was McDonald's wrappers on the floor, and there's a cowbell laying there. I'd get in, and it'd go clang, clang, clang. I'd kick it around. I'd move it around. And Danny Wiley was sitting in the back. Finally, one morning, we'd go eat breakfast. I picked that cowbell up. I said, Freckles, what is this? He said, that's just an old bell I had. I said, do you still use it? He said, no. He said, just throw it in the back. It'll be fine. I said, can I have it? I lost that bell for 40 years. 40 years. And the whole time it was sitting on the mantel in my living room. My wife said, well, if you dust a house every once in a while, you'd know where that bell was.
So you've got a bull riding bell
mm-hmm.
from Freckles Brown.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I had a friend write on it with like a piece of white marker.
Yeah.
And it said, owned by Freckles Brown, Sykeston, Missouri, 1981. And I have a witness that verified all that. Danny White, who was sitting in the back seat.
Oh, my goodness.
But he was so instrumental and just such a nice man to talk to, you know? I mean, he just had such a good attitude about rodeoing, people, life, God. Freckles was a godly man.
Yeah.
You know, he really was.
Wow. Wow. And when we started, you said you've got a poem about Freckles Brown.
I do. I wrote a poem about him riding Tornado. And for a long time, it hung at Colorado Springs in the Rodeo Hall of Fame.
And for our listeners, who's Tornado?
Tornado was a bull owned by Jim Shoulders, had never been ridden. Red Steagall has a song about Freckles riding Tornado. And it was just such a wonderful ride. I didn't get to see it in real. I saw it videos of it. But I used the ride where I saw him make at Memphis. And I wished I had that with me. You'd love it. It's a good poem, you know, about Freckles and Tornado.
Okay.
And but I've been just so lucky. And his daughter, you know, her and her husband had it in their house for a long time, hanging on the wall. They made it into a poster.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. At this point, we wrapped up our interview. And I really, really, you heard me ask him, I really wanted to hear the poem that he had written about Freckles Brown that had been on display at the Pro Rodeo Hall of Fame out there in Colorado Springs. A couple days later, Ernie called, and we finished our conversation. I apologize in advance for the poor phone reception I had on that given day.
Well, my dealings and friendship with Freckles Brown started my ninth grade in high school. However, I never met Freckles till my first year while attending the University of Tennessee at Martin on the rodeo team. My first PRCA rodeo was Memphis, Tennessee, and there was Mr. Freckles Brown. But my ninth grade year, I had lost my father, and I watched ABC Wide World of Sports, and Freckles Brown was the famous cowboy that rode Tornado then. At the ripe old age, I think he was in his late 40s. I've got it somewhere. But it impressed me, and I asked my mother, I said, give me that man's address. I'm going to write him a letter. So I did. Time went on, about 3 weeks. I wrote the man a letter. How my mother got his address is beyond me, but she did. And Freckles Brown wrote me a letter back. I still have the letter today in his own handwriting. But he said, you live in the Southeast Circuit. And he said, I would advise getting your permit someday and then going PRC, or back then it was RCA. And so I first met him at UT Martin that year, and I said, do you remember writing a young man in Georgia a letter about 6 years ago? He said, yeah, I think his name was Eric. I said, no, it was Ernie, and that's me. And he said, well, by golly, he said, you took my advice. He said, you're here. Of course, they accepted permits, but he was there. And he rode this bull, 49 of Steiner's. I think that was the last rodeo we ever won. And I was so impressed by the way the cowboys scooped him up after the whistle. That bull would have had to run over 50 people before he ever got to Freckles. But that's the kind of person Freckles was. Everybody loved him. So a couple of years later, when I started writing cowboy poetry, I couldn't get that thought out of my mind. So I wrote a poem. It's called Freckles Brown and Tornado. And it goes like this. There's a famous cowboy in the arena, standing calmly in front of the chute as he waits for him to load that 2,000-pound brute. His riding glove is folded and neatly tucked in his chaps. He checks the rails on his spurs, then he tightens down his straps. With nothing but ride buried in his mind, the bull comes in the chute. His adrenaline flows because he knows it's time. He adjusts his rope and steps down for one last look. And the clown pats him on the back and reminds him he's drawed a bucker that likes to hook. He acknowledges what he said with just a simple nod. He wasn't being cocky. He just rides with his faith in God. He doesn't pray for the Lord to help him win. He just asks to stay healthy, sound, so he can do it all again. He never hears the announcer when he calls his name or when he's talking about the great bull he's drawn with all of his unridden fame. Finally, the chute gate swings, and he's right in the middle of a ton of rage. It's the finals in Oklahoma City, and history's about to write a new page. 4 seconds into the ride, 8,000 people came screaming to their feet, pulling for him, yelling, "Bear down, cowboy," hoping he wouldn't lose his seat. And at the end of that eight-second ride, you would have thought the building was about to come down, because the bull that just got rode was the Great Tornado, and the cowboy was Freckles Brown. As he made his dismount, Tornado whirled and gave him a serious look, but he must have known it was old Freckles, because he never offered to hook. Cowboy swarmed him in the arena. They all knew him as friend and carried him out on their shoulders to celebrate his win. Freckles Brown became a legend, and everyone knew his name. And though he's no longer with us, he'll ride forever in the Rodeo Hall of Fame. When it came to riding bulls, Freckles knew no danger, and outside the arena, he never met a stranger. And today, I'm a better person for having known this great man. His motto in life was, be honest, try hard, and be the very best you can. But that poem means a lot, you know.
Absolutely. Well done. Well done. Great poem.
Well, I've battled this thing sometimes when my feelings are involved, and even, you know, Doug, a little poem like that, I get emotional.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that.
And yeah. I think, you know, I'm just like the rest of these old folks, you know. I bet you a dollar I ain't going to live as long as I have, you know.
Right.
And like these reunions and things. And I noticed something this year. I noticed, you know, it's like a high school reunion when you used to go to them, or I do, did, and still do sometimes. Mm-hmm. But each year my class dwindles. And see, there's not enough young people that really appreciate and remember what a blessing for cowboys North Georgia right there at Mountain Cove was. Not just rodeo, but ranchers and everybody, you know.
Yeah.
But
for
and
sure.
I was so fortunate to grow up in an environment like that. Because if I hadn't, I wouldn't have been a cop. I'd been in jail.
Right.
But anyway, Doug. Anyway, I never help you. I'm not. I hope you don't think I'm just being a blowhard and looking for publicity. I'm not. It's not me. My deal's done. You know, John and I carried on this bull riding clinic schools here since 2005, and we missed the year of pandemic, and now they're wanting me to put together another one, and I just don't know if I can do it anymore. Mm-hmm. I'm not. My back hurts all the time, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I still love it. Now, we buck bulls here, Taos, you know, pretty regular.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Hey, dude, if you're ever around West Tennessee, you'd be tickled to death to see my old saddle shop and all the pictures I have. We started 8 world champions right here at my house, in college.
Oh,
and IPRA, Corey Bailey and John, when he won the BFO, and Hudson Bolton. And I'm not bragging about that. I'm just honored that them kids didn't forget where they come from. So that proved that we helped them besides bull riding, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So,
that
well,
makes
Doug,
sense.
Thank you
yeah.
for everything. And
yeah.
if I can ever be a help or something like that, or, you know, I just appreciate knowing you.
All right.
I appreciate you, Doug. So
All
have
right.
a good day.
All right. We'll talk.
Hey, if you're ever through West Tennessee now,
yes,
we live on 412 going towards when you cross the river, you know, going
okay.
into Missouri.
Okay.
We're up here in the northwest corner.
Okay.
So.
Okay. Excellent. All right.
Well, good to talk to you.
Good to
thank
talk
you
to you
so much for being there.
Thank you.
See you, brother.
Bye-bye. We hope that you enjoyed this episode of our podcast with Ernie Roberts. If you do, please share it with your friends. Word of mouth is always the best advertising. To make your listening easier, you can find us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, YouTube, and just search for Beyond the Chutes and follow us, like us, rate us. Subscribe, give us comments, let us hear from you. And if you like reels, we got reels. Check out our Beyond the Chutes Facebook page and click follow. We'd like to say thank you to Parasite Systems for their support with our podcast. Parasite System is a push-button parasitic diagnostic system for your pasture animals, horses, cattle, goats, sheep, chickens, and now for your companion animals, your dogs and your cats. Keep your rodeo horses in top condition. Remember, the miles you are driving, they are riding. And you can find Parasite at parasitesystems.com. That's Parasite, S-I-G-H-T, systems.com. And we've got a coupon for your mail-in testing, BTC023, for 50% off. Use that coupon code. And I listen to a lot of podcasts about a lot of subjects, rodeo, wrestling, racing, you name it. And I want to encourage you to listen to the Rodeo Roots podcast. Rob and Dana Gann and Blue Jeans are recording some great interviews, and you can find them on all the major streaming platforms. And a big thank you to the IRA Project Facebook group for all their help and guidance, and for connecting the rodeo community. We'd like to say thank you to Tim Sparks and Marlon Harris. They've really helped us connect with the rodeo greats of the IPRA, of the IRA. And this is Beyond the Chutes with Ernie Roberts. Until next time, this is Doug Simcox. Thank you for listening.